Hi, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show, the show for animal training and behavior nerds, where I, Ryan Cartledge, interview the world's most proficient animal training and behavior geeks. We're absolutely thrilled and grateful to have you here with us today. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on whatever you're listening to this on so that you don't miss a single episode. Each episode of this show is brought to you on behalf of the ATA membership. And if you like the conversations in this episode, then you're invited to continue them with like-minded behavior nerds within the membership area, which you can find out more about at www.animaltrainingacademy.com. You'll get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalog of previous web class replays, plus a huge library of videos and projects to help problem solve your training challenges. Plus, we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group and forum areas. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behavior geeks. But we will get started on today's episode, where I am ridiculously excited and feeling really pumped about bringing back a past guest. For the first time, an ATA podcast guest would have been on this show three times. And for this prestigious honor, I'm thrilled that it's someone whom has helped me redefine so many aspects of my own training over the years, Ava Bertelsen. Ava has a master's degree in behavior analysis and a passion for all things related to behavior, learning, and animal welfare. Together with business partner Emily Johnson-Vay, Ava runs their collaboration Carpe Momentum, teaching seminars on the general principles of behavior and learning and coaching trainers in the art of structuring great training sessions, regardless of the venue or the species. Ava is a board member of the Swedish Association for Behavior Analysis, a faculty member of Clicker Expo, and an enthusiastic disseminator of ethical practices based in behavioral science. In addition to her own teaching, she has been instrumental in introducing Tag Teach and Fair Free in Scandinavia. Ava loves networking and connecting people and ideas, and she hosts the yearly CCC, Choice, Control and Communication Conference, in her hometown on the west coast of Sweden. At the time of this podcast, her latest joint venture has just launched, the international ABC247.wtf webshop, with products and online learning opportunities for behavior nerds. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome back for numero tres appearance, the kind, generous, hardworking, fun-loving, ripple-making, extraordinaire Ava Bertelsen to the show today, who's patiently waiting by in Sweden on the other side of the planet. Ava, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us again at Animal Training Academy.
Oh, wow. Hi, Ryan. My pleasure, as always. Wow, I am so excited to get to talk to you again.
I know we haven't planned what we're going to talk about today. We have so much fun just geeking out when we connect, so we thought we'll try something new for this episode and just make it a catch-up conversation that we might as well invite you, the podcast audience, into as well. So we'll just see where this conversation takes us. So Ava, you can start your 1 hour of inspirational nonstop dialogue now and go.
Oh, wow. Just 1 hour, are you sure? Can we do that? Have we ever managed to actually stick to an hour?
Well, we talked to the other day, I think, for two. And I mean, we might as well have just recorded that. So we'll just pick up. We left off. Hey, do you know what I did this morning? I traveled back in time to, I think it was November 2017, and I listened to the end of our podcast episode that we released nearly 2.5 years ago. And the part I listened to was your answer to my question, what you want to see happen over the next 5 to 10 years. Now, we're only a quarter of the way towards a 10-year mark. But your answer to that question was, because I was curious, I was like, what was Ava thinking in 2017? And your answer was that you want to see an increased focus on the individual and more mm-hmm. dissemination of behaviour science.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you feel that vision, that vision of the future that you had 2.5 years ago has approximated along over this period of time?
Oh, from my viewpoint, it's definitely going in the right direction. It's just thinking back of my day today, I've spent the day out in the snow doing dog training and doing a consultation together with Anna, friend and colleague, with a German Shepherd who needed help with her nail trims. And this might be a client that we wouldn't have connected with 3 years ago. And she's working with her vet clinic, who are really positive to the work that she's trying to do now, which is also something that I'm not sure if we would have had that connection 3 years ago. So a lot of increased focus on the individual, maybe especially when it comes to husbandry training, but also when it comes to the whole, can we provide freedom of choice as much as we can? And both those areas, oh yeah, definitely an increase. And I mean, for the behavior science aspect of it, just listening to the conversations going on in our own community, I would say they have come quite a long way in a couple of years. More people having a shared language of moving into behavior science, I would say. It's a really interesting question, because this would be like my very private perspective of what I see around me in my nearest community, and in like just one step away from myself, sort of. Would be interesting to have more data points on that. I was about to ask you, like, what would be from your perspective the answer to the same question?
Well, I'm so aware that, I mean, the first thought that comes to my mind, I don't think it answers your question, but so aware that I live in my little ATA bubble, mm-hmm. always guided very helpfully. And I feel otherwise I wouldn't be doing it, obviously, serving by being in front of and helping that line of people down the street who want to learn from us, as opposed to those who don't. So, you know, I'm so busy doing that. Busy, I hate that word. My time is filled that I allocate towards ATA.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of my time allocated towards my family and other Ryan things that aren't animal training. That's where I reside. So I know that in that community, one big shift, because on some level, a large amount of what I do influences that space, because that's the content that we create. You know, this conversation here today is influenced by my first question and other thoughts that I have in my mind. And part of our journey has been to... which has been significantly influenced by your offerings, for example, learning how to do flowcharts and think about the if-thens of an individual session, and then think about an individual session, and then to have learned from Sarah Owing since you and I talked in 2017, and using like her feedback and revision methodology to kind of really focus on what just happened in the session. And kind of, not kind of, but actually choose from that information what is the one small approximation, and kind of throw out training plans altogether in some, like have a training plan there, but like so, but also not, like I don't really anymore. Like I just kind of like, what just happened? Like where are we? Where do we need to go next? And so for me, yeah, like it's all about the individual, but I acknowledge the bubble that I live in. Does that make sense?
Yes. There is something about this, toss away the training plans. It's like have a training plan, but don't use it. There is something about the creativity of training and capturing what's going on in the moment, whether it is in the animal training or if it's just in our experience of what's going on in life in general, where Emily and I have been talking about this quite a lot lately, how when we get reasonably fluent in something, we don't need the plans as much anymore. It's like you need the plan to get started, to have a structure to follow, to be able to experience the contingencies that plan puts us into. And then once that's fluent, you can just go with the flow of the moment because you have the skills to do that. And then when beginning to develop some new skill or some new aspect, then you might need to go back to, okay, let me tease this apart, find some small things that I need to focus on, build those and be a little bit sort of square around that. And then once that skill is integrated or that thought or that idea is integrated in your actions, then you can throw away the plan again and just go with what's in front of you. That's probably how I do that, or how I think I do it. I don't know if that's how I do it, but I would think about it. And that's kind of cool that it's like when you know what you're doing a little bit better, you don't need to think about it. So you might need to think about it in order to develop the skills, but then having developed the skills, then you can skip the thought altogether, which is just super cool.
Yeah, so I'm like, this is where I'm at as well. And then I'm kind of thinking about how do you teach this? Because a question that I ask and I see others ask is, should I do this? Should I do that? And it's like, if you had the knowledge and within your own learning history, the experience to know if you should or shouldn't do that, then you wouldn't be asking that question.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you get that experience? Ooh. Is by implementing what you're asking you should do, because then you're going to have the data to be able to make that decision in the future. So there's a space that I'm not too sure about right now where That is what I mean by throw away the training plan.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't, like, sorry, go on.
It's a bit like a principle over method thing. The training plan being your method of choice, and then being able to not follow a set plan or recipe, but rather go with your knowledge of the learner in front of you and your own skills and how the principles of behavior work. That will allow you to sort of play it by ear.
Yeah, and then thinking about the individual, is that applicable to? Is because I view it that way, and that's been helpful for me. Is there value in teaching that to others?
And how on earth do you teach that? Because
that's
you can't.
That's my question.
Can you teach it through talking about it? Probably not. It's like an experiential learning thing.
Right. So the other day I was in a three-way conversation
mm-hmm.
with people that are all involved with ATA in some way, but their current engagement varies. Some mm-hmm. people disengaged currently. Some people more engaged. And I use the phrase without thinking, fail forward, which uh-huh. means like there's a quote that I put in ATA recently from, oh, I forget his name, I'm sorry. He was an early CEO, I think, of Microsoft. And he said, the fastest way to success is to double your failure rate, which is something that's guided me in creating ATA. So I said, fail forward. And one of the people in the conversation said, well, what do you mean by that? Like, try saying that at the organization I work at. Like, you're going to be grilled.
mm-hmm.
For like, so your question, how do you teach that? I don't know. I'm so curious about that right now, especially when, and then thinking about the individual, is it relevant for every individual? Because what is a learning history of an individual human, and how, and is the thing we have to teach first a reframe of the word failure?
Is the thing we ought to teach first a reframe of the word failure?
Or the concept of failure.
Yeah, there is something about that where our language has this dichotomy of good or bad, right or wrong. This behavior, this action is a success, this is a failure. That comes with a lot of burden that doesn't help, that gets you caught up in other behaviors associated with the word failure that aren't really productive for where you might want to go. So from that, I would definitely think that you're onto something here in saying let's reframe failure.
So let's reframe failure. What is failure, like your gut instinct right now, without thinking too much about it? What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Off criteria.
Off criteria?
Mm-hmm.
Can you unpack that for the listeners?
This is so curious, since Em and I are in busy work weeks preparing for the Lemonade Conference. This is one of the topics that we will dive into, and like, how on earth do you even talk about it when we don't have good words? Like, what to do when mistakes happen in training, or errors, or... And it's like, we're not happy about any of the vocabulary, because they all come with that burden. So off criteria being like one possible approximation of what is this behavior X that we're seeing in front of us? Because there is something in our work that makes us put that in the category of, this is not what I am striving to repeat. This is not the highest reinforcer for me to see. Or this is something, when I've seen it once, I will behave to create a variation of it rather than to create a repetition of it. So if something is meeting my criterion, I would say I would behave to make it happen again or advance on the same line, while something goes in a category of concept formerly known as failure, it would be something that I would take information from and adjust my behavior to make variations happen rather than make that thing happen again. Thus off criteria. Oh my goodness, did that make sense? It's difficult to, as always, it's difficult to talk about words.
This is what our last podcast episode was about.
I know.
I'm sorry if for the people listening, I thought my microphone was turned off then, but it was on, I believe. So sorry if you heard my keyboard tapping. Off criteria for us as a learner, or off criteria for our learner as a learner, or for both?
Both, depending on what it was that label failure or error was referring to.
Your answer is not what I expected. That's a really, in a good way, in a good way. I haven't heard anyone define, because your big thing, like, and I'm still to catch up with all of the, I say optimistically, Clicker Expo presentations,
including
some of your and Emily's, which I was jumping around so often, so I did attend sections of, including your Fika
yes.
What, your presentation at Expo, what were they, can you remind us?
So we had a start button lab, working with people and their dogs and developing a start button, but then we also had our 6-point list of for a successful training. Being that, figure out your goals, make a plan, and then do the training, and then think of that times two, so that you are one, you as a trainer, count as well. And then the list becomes have a goal for the learner, have a plan for the learner, and from that, figure out what it is that you need to do and make a plan for how to teach yourself to do that. And then train yourself, and then you can train your learner. For me, this sort of ties back into what you were saying about throw away the plan. Because once you have that, or for me, for us anyway, once we have that structure down, we don't need to think about it. It's there. It's those are behaviors that happen on cue from what's happening in the training session, not happening because they are on step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 on the list. But it's always possible to refer all the thoughts or decisions or actions in the training. They can refer back to that list if somebody asks. But it's typically not an active thought.
Yeah, I like that. And that's what's been... I haven't been using your specific structure that you taught in that class, although I'm desperate to go watch it. And I know that it's been helping our members because they've shared screenshots of it in our community and talked about how beneficial it is, and then shared training in our forums.
I saw a couple of those. It's like that's ridiculously reinforcing as a presenter to see those screen shares. It's like, yay!
We've got to get Pavey to watch it and do one of his famous sketches for it. Right, so that like resonates so strongly with me because I've been, as mentioned before, implementing Sarah Owings' teachings, and she offers a structure too, and reviewing and kind of planning out your next session, which also leans towards throwing away a training plan. So then, curious on your thoughts, is that presentation about having a structure aimed towards professional trainers or what level of trainer is it? Is it aimed towards, like, is that the same presentation you would give to green trainers?
It's probably not the same presentation that I would give to green trainers, but it's definitely the same structure. Because as a green trainer, just that the idea that training is something that we do, it's actions of our parts as trainers, and that it's typically beneficial to identify what it is that we need to do and check that we can do it before going out to train the animal or train the learner. Like that part of it is maybe even more beneficial for the novice trainer who might not have thought about that before. If you're an experienced trainer, you're typically very well aware that it's your actions that influence the learner. But if you're a novice trainer, maybe that thought hasn't really crossed your mind before, that, oh, this training thing that I'm doing, that is actually me doing things with my body and in my thinking, and that those things can be separated out and taught. You can teach them to yourself before working with the animal.
You've just added so much to my feedback giving. So one aspect of feedback I try to give people is just one thing they did that I liked from what we just saw. But if you mm-hmm. can build on that by saying, because I like that you did this because it helped your learner in this session.
Nice.
And that can help connect those dots potentially.
Yep. I would think so.
Try it anyway.
I would think so. Because that also puts awareness as in it prompts the thought of when I move my hand like this, that increases the likelihood that my dog does that. It's not just that Ryan says that it's a good thing that I move my hand like this, which is reinforcing, but it's also establishing the effect that you see on the animal as a reinforcer. Because there are important things about what that this oh this ties back into the whole good, bad, failure, not failure, on off criteria, like seeing behavior and taking the feedback of the behavior you see and having that as a guidance, as a decision point for yourself. Should I keep doing this when it leads to that behavior, or should I shift and do something else to get some other behavior instead? And we need to know if the behavior we're seeing is one that we want to see more of, or one that we might want to see a little bit less of. Like today, I was playing with one of my favorite border collies, Fjant. Love him to pieces. And we were playing with let go of the tug toy when I said thank you. And on some of the instances, I got a slower release of the tug toy. And some I got a really super quick one. And for me, the slower one is off criterion, meaning I want to see that a little bit less. So then I will adjust my behavior instantly, just because that to me is a cue. Like if I see this slightly slower release, that's a cue for me that if I keep doing what I'm doing, it's going to get slower and slower. And eventually I'm not going to have a release on my thank you cue anymore. So it's like for me, with my training background and my experience and experience with this particular learner and others that I would have similar experiences to, that would be a cue for me to instantly change my behavior. And it's not to say that's a bad behavior. It's not to say it's a failure thing, but it's definitely off the criterion that I'm looking for. It's enough off for me to change my behavior as good as I can to get less of that and more of the super quick one instead.
Right, so you can flowchart in your head in the moment based on what your learner's giving you. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I would think so.
Okay.
Oftentimes, not always. Definitely not always. But when training goes well, yes.
Yeah. So what would you recommend to someone who... I've been thinking recently, like you see, like you might watch a session like that on social media, right? Someone shared their training video. What you just described, you see in someone else's video, a slower release of the tug toy.
Mm-hmm.
And you might say, in your automatic flowchart that's happening in your head,
yep,
we had lower criteria, therefore we do this. So you might go in and say, hey, X person, maybe try this. Right, now if we are to throw out a training plan and the learner being the human mm-hmm. has to make that adjustment, but we don't know what the learner's history is with the knowledge that is required to implement what you've just suggested and their learning history with implementing that kind of strategy or strategies that share similarities, how would you provide feedback to someone else in that situation?
This is very much what this training session also ended up being about, curiously enough, where I had given some ideas previously that were not helping with this particular aspect of it. It seems as though the best general feedback goes in two lines. Part of them being, take a break and find a scenario where this behavior is highly likely. And the second being, once you got the behavior going that you're looking for, reinforce that more than all the other behaviors you're working on. It seems to always go back to that. When training doesn't go smoothly, it's often because we don't make the changes. Like, make enough of a change. Or we make the change, but then when the behavior happens that we're looking for, we don't reinforce it immediately enough or well enough. And somehow that's where we get caught up in the training plans, I'm guessing. If you're following the plan, but the behavior isn't moving in the way you were hoping, but you keep following the plan, then we build behavior we don't necessarily want to see more of. So making adjustments when we see something that we don't want to see so much more of, make antecedent adjustments. Get out of there and make some adjustments.
And to brainstorm those ideas, am I following that using a structure, one being the one that you and Emily shared in Clicker Expo, would be a good tool?
I think so. But this, how to build the trainer creativity is as much is as mind-boggling for me as it is for you. It's like...
Thank you. It's not just me.
It's totally not just you. It's definitely not.
Big sigh of relief.
And I'm like, if we think that we're reasonably creative as trainers, how did we develop that creativity? People who would say that somebody else would label as creative, or that might label themselves as creative, as in when you're brainstorming, you come up with a lot of ideas quickly and a few of them are actually working as well. Where does that start from? What we know from creativity research in other areas, there is an example, I don't have a reference for this, but I learned it a long time ago. There was an example of you had a bunch of people in a room and they got the assignment of create from the material that you have in front of you on the table your own personalized creative version of a clothes hanger. Do you call it that in English? Like the thing that you hang your coat on? So when people got that assignment without getting any models, they ended up, like, be as creative as you possibly can. They all ended up to look fairly similar, interestingly enough. But when people got 10 different models to view first, and then they got the assignment, okay, be as creative as you can, then they went off in all sorts of directions. So actually having the models and having a variety of models meant that what could be labeled as creativity behavior went up. So somehow, not asking for creativity, but building a wide repertoire might be what gets what we call creativity to emerge. So that's one thought that I have on this.
I got lost in my own thoughts here. You're inspiring so many thoughts. I'm ashamed to admit I missed... I missed a little bit. Sorry.
Now I'm curious what went on.
I'll share with you. I'll share with you. Good. But first, developing a wide repertoire to create, sounds weird, create creativity, to help bolster creativity, inspire creativity. Did you just talk about creating a repertoire of behaviors? Or did I think I
yes.
jumped it.
Both yes, of behaviors, okay. But also of possible goals in the learner or possible training plans. So it might not, might be just seeing 10 different versions of how something can be trained might mean both that you can follow those 10 models, but it might also increase the likelihood that you on your own can come up with the 11th or 12th model that you haven't seen before. While if you've only seen 3 different, you might be less likely to come up with novel ideas.
Because no one went to anything last year. In 2019, I went to a Susan Freeman and Peter Clark. On that note, Katja Pedersen, I saw that she went to a fancy dress party in the weekend and she dressed up
as a wolf attendee.
It was so clever.
Hilarious. Yes.
Anyway, no one went to anything last year. But I went to Peter Clark and Susan Freeman retreat in New South Wales in Australia, and Peter left me. My biggest takeaway from that was Peter consistently saying there's many paths that lead to Rome, saying Rome is the behavior and there's many paths that go there. And it inspired me in training Phoebe this year to after having an unpleasant nail trimming experience, to flop on her side and allow me to use a Dremel on all her nails. And when I reached my goal that I just described to you, I went back and reviewed all my training videos, and there was three or four significant pathways that we took towards reaching that goal that we ended.
Yeah.
And I was left with this feeling like a sign of being a learner, and potentially a necessity of reaching your goals is the amount of things you tried that didn't work. Which goes back to that saying, I can see you like eyes going up to the right side of your head going, Ryan, what the? Goes back to that saying, the fastest way to success is to double your failure rate. So it's like not even, like my journey, I can only share from my journey, like not even having so many different behaviours to watch and see that there's different ways, but also being brave enough to, and it goes back to that, should I do things? The answer to me is always like, yes, you should.
And that there is definitely, for me, in my thinking, an issue with the word failure, because it sounds like a dead end, and it's not. Because having gone down that route, you collected some information that told you whether to keep going in the same direction or make an adjustment. So it's not that you shouldn't have gone there to begin with. It's not it's something that you ought to have done differently from the start. It's not that you were taking the wrong path. It's you were on a good path that now required some changes and got you to shift to a different path.
But you couldn't have got to the point where you knew that you needed to make those changes.
No.
If you hadn't gone down that original path.
Exactly. Exactly. And the information that you collected along the way is beneficial for what you do next. It helps you make better decisions on path number two or path number three.
Would you say it's beneficial? Or might you say, and you might not, which is totally cool, that it's necessary? Because
if it's a question.
If it's not necessary, right, then you would be relying on, like, let's say textbook learning as opposed to contingency-based learning. So, like, I want to go down this pathway, but I've been told by X trainer who's more experienced and knowledgeable than me the reasons why I need to go down an alternative path, which all logically makes sense to me, but I don't know what that feels like. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I put a video up on my personal, we've talked about this in the podcast before, and it's just a great example for me of what I'm about to talk about, of teaching Phoebe to back up, which was me just going, I haven't trained a dog to back up this way before. I want to feel what that feels like and experience it with Phoebe.
Yep.
There were suggestions, though, that there was a way to teach back up. And I could understand the logic behind all of the thinking, but that's different than training.
Definitely different than experiencing yourself. So, and those might be differences. Like, is it necessary? Is it necessary in order to teach my animal a specific behavior to go through five different procedures on the path? For that, my gut feeling answer would be no. But is it necessary for me to develop my stay on the balls of your feet training skills and adjust my behavior in accordance to what comes at me in the training session? I would guess yes, because I need experience in shifting my behavior in accordance to what I see, in order to practice shifting my behavior in accordance with what I see.
By training the same behavior with different individuals.
Mm-hmm. Or same behavior with the same individual with slightly different strategies. I mean, that's I love doing that. And I guess that's part of how I do training, is to teach the same thing in many different ways. Just because I get so much more information. And if I end up seeing behavior that I don't particularly like, I can always just shift to one of the other strategies that I'm using to to work with the same behavior.
Can you give us an example of when you might have done that with the same owner?
The thing that first came to my mind for some reason was agility weave pose. So it's like I have a ton of strategies for teaching weave pose, and I typically use all of them. I might have just shaping nose going along that path, click, treat in front, or click, throw your toy. I might have barriers and just sending the dog to just run through the barriers. I might have working with various angles with one strategy that might include some barriers or some shaping procedure. It might be going straight from straight angles every second session, and that might be, if I did the angles with one strategy, maybe I do the straight ones with another strategy. And that's just one of many examples. It's like, I'm thinking, do I ever train a behavior with just one strategy? That's probably really rare. This is another type of behavior that is sort of coming back constantly now, is talking about start button behaviors. And human learners often wanting to have a bit of a recipe to follow. Like, okay, if we get started like this, what is the next step? And I'm like, well, there are these 20 different possible ways to go, and you can take a couple of steps down one route and then shift and take a couple of steps down another route and see what you get. And then with that information, you can merge it together. And if you see that, like, if we start a communication with the dog about seeing the nail trimmers, say, I show them, you get a treat. I wait. You indicate that I should show them again so that you get a treat. Okay, that's one repetition or one type of session. And then maybe we put them on the floor and I shape my dog to put a paw on them. That's a different session. And then maybe we teach a stand with your chin on a chair. That's a third session. And then maybe we merge these together. How do I merge them together? Well, if it's like, do I then put have the nail trimmers in my hand as the dog puts the chin on the chair and then move the nail trimmer towards the dog's body? Or do we instead have the dog put his chin on the chair first and then I show the nail trimmers off at a distance? Like, there are 1,000 versions of how we can merge things together. And it doesn't necessarily matter in which order you do them, as long as you're quick to take the information that you get from one or two repetitions and then do something that is based on that information. And that doesn't make the first thing a failure. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't have done it. It's just an information collection procedure.
Hmm. Right. So, should I do this? Should I do that? Let's imagine you're a student of Ava's. Coming back to this creativity question and the thoughts that were going through my mind as you were talking, which made me miss a little bit of what you said, is that you're an instructor, in some way affiliated with the Shape of Enrichment?
No, not with the Shape of Enrichment.
Sort of
in a little bit a long time ago, yes. But I rarely... We never, back then, figured out a way to move forward with that particular path.
Right. Okay.
I enjoy their work immensely, though.
Yeah, well, they've got a certain way of teaching creativity, which was what I was thinking. But my question is, maybe you've already answered it, and we're just going to recap everything. So let's say greenish trainer. You've got a limited time with them, and then you have to leave them.
Mm-hmm.
So you're gonna like cast them off into the world by themselves. They don't necessarily. They might have at the start of your consultation seen failure as an endpoint.
Yep.
They might not have the contingency-based learning to implement all of the things they've just learned, but they understand it on a logical perspective.
Yep.
And we've handed them a structure to use. What else would you add on to that? How would you gift them bravery in trying new things that might,
you know,
quote fail.
This might sound paradoxical, but my first response would be teach a way out. Teach strategies to abort and teach some cues for when to stop doing what you're doing. Like, if you can get out of the situation, if you find yourself in a situation and you're like, I'm not sure what I'm doing now, or I see my dog taking her ears out to the side, or backing up a little bit rather than leaning into the situation, what do I do then? Toss some treats on the floor or go back to station. Having those get out of their behaviors well trained for the human team member means that you don't need to worry because you can always get out of there. If you know what you're looking for so that you can get out of there, you can try freely. If you don't have strategies for how to get out of there, you're going to be hesitant to go into something new. I have a rock climbing story for you. I'm kind of scared of heights. I used to be even more scared of heights. Scared as in avoiding situations where you end up high up, and when I ended up high up, getting nauseous and wanting to throw up. So rock climbing, not really being my thing. It's like just a thought would be, why would I do that? And then still going with friends out to, we have beautiful like rock walls around where I live. And going with some friends who were experienced climbers. And they were like, do you want to try? And I look up this wall and I'm like, no, definitely not. But then again, there is that sort of social thing and curiosity at the same time going, oh, but I would like to. I would like to dare to do this. So what was there was this harness. So they were like, oh, you're going to be completely safe. You can always just lean back into the harness and you can get back down. And I'm like, I've never done that. I don't want to end up meters above the ground and not being comfortable. I'm not going to be comfortable just lean back into the harness. But what we did, what this particular rock wall allowed for, was for me to get the harness on and sort of walk out on a ledge that was just 1.5 meters off ground. Even I was comfortable on that. And without having to have been climbing up, I could just walk up, lean back into the harness and practice getting down. So back chaining, getting out of there if I felt uncomfortable. And that meant that I could actually be brave enough to climb 10 meters up, which I never would have thought I would have done. But just having that, the skill and the knowledge and the experience in how to get out of there if I got uncomfortable meant that I could be a lot braver in quotation marks, meaning climbing into a situation that I had never been in before. And that would typically be for me a scary thing that I would get nauseous of and that I would avoid. And I'm thinking it's the same thing in our training, getting into something new. If I can get out of there, I'm going to be more likely to get into it. Plus, I'm not going to mess up the training for the learner as much if I have a decent way of exiting the situation rather than sort of digging a hole that just goes deep.
Right. So thank you for sharing that rock climbing. Did you manage to climb the wall afterwards? Well done.
I did. It was 10 meters up. I was so proud of myself. I know. So much fun.
So let's say we say, if you find yourself, and you taught me this as well, by the way, if you find yourself thinking in a session, I don't know what to do next, that it's time to stop the session, mm-hmm. and think about that when your learner's not in front of you. Thank you, Ava, for that gift. You taught me that. And that's a cue for me. Ryan, you're being cued right now. Stop.
Yeah.
Throw your learner some treats. Get a piece of paper out. Then come back. Right. So then I can do that. I go, okay, cool. Treat scatter. Get out. Whiteboard. and then I can flowchart or I can brainstorm. I feel confident that I'm creative, and I have enough contingency-based learning to not worry that much about flowcharts. Like, you taught me that doesn't have to be the perfect answer, just have some answers, and then you can implement and base your next session based on that. That's part I find challenging to teach, though. So we can teach, here's your out. Then a green trainer, what do they do next? How do they go, okay, cool, I do a flowchart, but I still have no idea what to do next?
So my thought would be they will not be doing a flowchart until they know what they want to do. So the first step would be, what now? What do I do now? Do I have in my repertoire, or in the book that I have in front of me, or in the friend that I'm training with? Does anybody here have an idea? What should I do now? Should I try the same thing, but just with better mechanics? Oh yeah, I could improve my mechanics. This probably felt a bit awkward because I was moving my hand and clicking at the same time. And oh yeah, right, I should click first and then move my hand. Let's practice my mechanics and then do the same session again. Or, oh, my friend here has a different strategy of working with the same behavior and they suggest I try that. Oh, let me just feel through the mechanics so that I know what I'm doing, and then let me bring out my learner again. Or let me feel through the mechanics, let me flowchart it so that I really have it out in the in ink in front of me with all my decision points, and then let me bring my learner out. But for me, the flowchart requires a pretty decent idea of what you're doing. I'm typically not, but that might just be me, I'm typically not that creative when I'm drawing my flowchart. The creativity needs to come before that, the idea of what am I going to do now. And for the more novice learner, rather than coming up with something, it might be ask a friend, read a book, go from, okay, if I had two thoughts in my head to begin with and I started with one of them, okay, let me go with route two now.
It makes complete sense. Do you need the green learner? If you were, let's say you could leave them with a support option, right? What if they didn't have a good support? Like, they're like, okay, cool, Ava, like, we've brought you in here, we've paid for your services, now we want to part ways and do this on our own.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have the support system where somebody else can come up with a strategy for you.
Yeah, like, what would be your thinking in that space? You're standing there, you're like, okay, cool, I want these guys to be successful moving forward. My support suggestion would be to ring a friend, use one of your lifelines. I'm thinking about Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Mm-hmm. But what are there other options?
I think that goes back to the, can we change things in the antecedent setup? Like, what would it require? What can you do to make this behavior likely to happen? Or to make some approximation of that behavior likely to happen? Because in my experience, if we can help people think of what might be an approximation to this behavior, a small approximation to this behavior, and what would it take for me to make it likely that that happens? Oftentimes, those ideas are there, but we might not have much training in actually taking that route. So say the dog is barking out the window at the neighbor's dog that passes by. Okay, what would it take? Under which conditions would the dog stay sleeping in the sofa? Oh, well, if I had all the curtains down and music on so that he didn't hear, then probably he would sleep. But that's not what I want to do. Oh, but that's actually a possibility. We can do that. So fostering the thought of actually changing enough, changing a lot more than we might from our everyday life be used to doing. And then when we see the behavior that we want, reinforce it. Oh, but it's just happening because I had the music on and the blinds down. So he didn't even notice the dog on the outside. Oh, perfect. He probably could hear like a tiny sound from a far distance. So let's reinforce staying on the sofa under those conditions. It's like both doing the antecedent arrangement changes that, or setup changes that make it likely that the behavior is happening. And then when the behavior is happening, because the situation is set so that it happens, actually reinforcing. It's like if we can do those two things, that's what training is all about, isn't it?
Mm. Which is going back to what you said earlier, right at the start.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I'm thinking, that is where we always need to go anyway. It's just if you have a lot of experience, maybe you can go, you can have more different versions that you can come up with of how to set up for increased likelihood that the behavior is going to happen. And you can sort of move quicker through your criteria or quicker through your changes in the environment. But it's always going to be about doing whatever is needed in the environment to get some approximation of the behavior going, and then making sure that that gets reinforced.
Love it. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. Looking at the time, I acknowledged that you have some exciting projects, and before it becomes time to finish, I want to ensure that we take this opportunity to share what they are with the audience of this podcast. So I apologize to everyone for very quickly changing the direction of the conversation. But like me and Ava said at the start, we'll just keep going and going, and then we won't do that right now. So instead, I mentioned it at the start, ABC247.WTF. Layers of behavior science in there.
Layers upon layers
upon
layers.
What is it?
Yes. Finally, this is happening. So I have a friend around here. Name is Caroline, and she has a Swedish web shop. And we've been like interacting around her web store. I've been giving suggestions of like book titles that would be awesome if she had in store, and toys and things like that. And she's really developed the product line that she offers in the web store in a way that makes it highly reinforcing for me to be in that, in collaborations with her and with her web store. So when she got in touch with me, it's almost a year ago, saying, you know, I'm thinking of starting a web store that also can, where I can also sell internationally. That went hand in hand with my desire to be able to offer online products. So Emily and I have done a little bit of that on Carrot Momentum, and it was a lot trickier than we thought. The technology about it, and I weren't necessarily agreeing. So the opportunity to sort of tag along on an existing web store where it wasn't just the online products, but there's also a physical line of products, and where I can get to put online stuff, was like, yay, let's do that. So that I got started working on that while in the US last spring. And our idea was, oh, this will probably launch by like midsummer. Sure. 6-7 months later, having been working on that on and off, now it's actually really, it is sort of, we've sneaky launched it. It's up and running. So by the time that this podcast is out, it will be possible to go in and buy things from it, which is just super exciting. So Emily and I will be putting quite a lot of Carrot Momentum material on there. The CCC conference, the Choice Control Communication that got cancelled due to the corona situation, we will be doing a webinar series instead, and that will be on there. And a ton of other interesting things that we can just keep developing. So super excited about that. And we started it calling it Animals 24/7, as that is similar to the name of the Swedish web store, but it's animals well, humans are animals too, but not everybody who is working with humans would see that. So it made more sense to call it ABC 24/7, which is behavior geekery, no matter what species you're working with. And then when it appeared to us that there is a domain possibility of WTF, .WTF, we didn't know that, but it's like, what's the function? Of course, we have to do that. So ABC247.WTF it is.
I've never heard of .WTF.
Super, super excited of that. I know, neither had I. So we're apparently reasonably unique in that so far.
Awesome. So people in New Zealand can order products off there and get them shipped to New Zealand? Or is the... That's the idea?
People in New Zealand, yeah. You can ship anywhere. Then, of course, the cost of shipping, as we know from international web stores, is whatever the cost of shipping is. But the possibility is there. And then also, for us to have the possibility of, like, providing combinations of physical products and online products, online learning opportunities, that means that you can sort of get inspiration from all sorts of things in the same space. Because often it's physical products go together with online learning opportunities, in my experience. So being able to, for example, for me and Emily, say, here is our agility book and here is a webinar that is introducing the training system that we use in the book, and to actually be able to sort of share that in the same space.
And the other thing that in 2017 we talked about on our podcast episode is your desire to go online. So congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I am super excited about the development that's been going on. It's been a steep learning curve for me to get things available online. And Emily and I, for the longest of time, had this Facebook banner going, yay, we're finally online, or we're on our way to launch things online. And now we've actually got quite a fair amount of courses that we have been offering and that we will be offering in the future, of webinars, of podcasts, and so on. So quite pleased to be. Also, that's been a good thing about the whole Corona situation, is that everybody is doing everything on Zoom. So it's like getting a lot of practice this year.
Well, it's fantastic. And did I saw that obviously every expo is a anniversary, but you've been at that for a long time now as well. It's I didn't realize you guys had been at Expo for so long. What was the number?
Yeah, we've been... So this was our 11th year of presenting at Expo. So our first Clicker Expo as presenters was back in 2010.
Who was there 11 years ago? How's...
Well, of the presenters... Michelle Polio had started a couple of years before that. Jesus was there. Ken was there. Kathy, of course, was there. Karen Pryor was still presenting at that time. Steve White was there. This puts the pressure of me not wanting to leave out anybody that I should mention. I think Debbie Martin must have been there around that time. Julie Shaw was there, I think. I am 100% sure that I am leaving people out that ought to be on the list. But Alexander Kurland was, of course, there.
Well, and
my apologies to all the people that were there and that I'm not mentioning.
My apologies to you for putting you on the spot to forget all the people that were there and that you're not mentioning.
But yes. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, wow. And I hadn't realized all. I mean, I hadn't really thought about it. I wonder how long Ava's been at Expo. It just hadn't crossed my mind. But to see that made me realize it built upon my appreciation of what the experience that you've gathered over the years and the amount of contingency learning you have and the amount that you've contributed to our community. And in the short time, you know, I remember back when I started ATA, I was like so influenced by a handful of people for years and years and years. And I just had no idea that this whole massive community existed. In the short time that you've been part of Animal Training Academy, you've been on numerous of our members-only pieces of content. You're the only guest to have ever now appeared on an ATA podcast 3 times, and your contribution is significant. So I thought it appropriate in the present moment to finish this episode today to just give gratitude to you and your life's work and everything that you've done to help learners, humans and non-humans. So from myself and on behalf of everyone who listens to the Animal Training Academy podcast show, thank you for all that you do, Ava Bertelsen.
Well, thank you so much. And I will just pass that on to all the people in that wider community that I've gotten the privilege to just be immersed in. It's a constant learning experience. And it's like from the very beginning, getting to be in the situations with people who share that same passion, and that you get that you get to sit in and listen, and learn from, and interact with, it's just amazing opportunities that I've had, and that's still, yeah, it's still such a pleasure just to enter into a space like ATA or like the Clicker Expo Faculty Lounge, or like just spending time with 3 nerdy friends or 1 nerdy friend and have conversations about training. Those conversations are always influenced by everything that goes on in the community. So it is such a community thing, this behavior nerdery that you're doing.
You're welcome. I mean, I just love that. So many people feel that about you. I know that recently we had a New Zealander join, and they were doing a training, and numerous people said, "Hey, Ava's ATA web class on flowcharts," and they linked to it. And I thought that's a big approximation, like watching a whole web class. But the next day, this person like came back. It was relatively recently. You might have been tagged in it, I'm not sure. But they had produced their first flowchart, and I was like, "Wow, you know." Like, and that's what I love.
I
about
know.
That,
I saw that
stored content. Yeah,
fantastic.
It's so cool.
Yes.
Well, everyone listening, thank you as well for investing your time in this podcast episode today. We welcome feedback. We had no plan or no schedule. Well, we had a schedule. That doesn't make sense. we had no plan. But the schedule dictates that we have to wrap up soon. So thank you for listening, and we'll wrap it up there.
Thank you so much.
We do, of course, really appreciate all of you tuning in today as well. And if you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about working with our animals in the most positive, funnest, choice-rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of this episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as the Netflix social media platform for behavior geeks. That's it for this episode, though. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much, everyone, for listening. You'll hear from us again soon.